Hello, everyone, and greetings to our guests, those on the webcast, and those who might be viewing this message later on recorded media. Today, we're going to present a Bible study entitled Outline of Matthew 24. There's a lot of material in Matthew 24, so our objective today is to create an outline of the main points in the chapter. In later Bible studies, we can explore individual points within Matthew 24. But before we cover Matthew 24, please recall that about a year and a half ago, we examined the four horses of Revelation 6. That particular Bible study video about the four horses of Revelation 6 was surprisingly removed from YouTube as being against its community standards. So we reposted the four horses video on a couple of other video host channels where it was well received. I mention the four horses of Revelation 6 because as we examine Matthew 24, we'll be able to see the parallels between Matthew 24 and the various chapters in the book of Revelation. And we'll see those parallels as we page through Matthew 24. The four horses of Revelation 6 include the white horse. The white horse symbolizes deceit or deception. Next comes the red horse. The red horse symbolizes war. After the red horse comes the black horse that symbolizes famine. The fourth horse is the pale horse, which symbolizes disease. So the four horses of Revelation are the white horse of deceit, the red horse of war, the black horse of famine, and the pale horse of disease. When we read through Matthew 24, let's keep those four horses of Revelation 6 in mind and see how they fit into Jesus' prophecies in Matthew 24. Now, for your notes, the first three verses of Matthew 24, let's just cross-reference the book of Revelation in chapters 1 through 5. And as we start reading Matthew 24, the first three verses are about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. We call this temple that Jesus was referring to as the second temple because the first temple is the temple that Solomon built. The Solomon's temple was destroyed about 587 BC by the Babylonian emperor Nebuchadnezzar. The second temple was constructed starting in 516 BC by Jews who returned from exile under the Persian king Cyrus the Great and was completed during the reign of Persian emperor Darius I. Ezra and Zerubbabel were instrumental in rebuilding the temple, and we can read about this in the book of Ezra. However, the early second temple was modest compared to the first temple, Solomon's temple. So when King Herod the Great began a project in 19 BC to restore the second temple to the splendor of the original Solomon's temple, King Herod's efforts were grand. The historian Josephus said that Herod kept 10,000 laborers on task for 8 years. The second temple was finally completed in 63 AD. Herod's temple was said then by historians to be even grander than the original Solomon's temple. The Herod's temple, the second temple, 500 yards or meters long, over 1,500 feet long, that's more than a quarter mile, and 400 yards wide, then almost a quarter mile wide. So a quarter mile is roughly three blocks. So if you take three blocks by three blocks, it's a huge undertaking. Herod started it in 19 BC, and it was only completed in 63 AD. So it took a long time. It was a lot of effort and a lot of big stones. And then it was only done for 7 years before the Romans came and destroyed it. But at that time, this was grand temple that Jesus said, one stone won't be left upon another. Now, that's hard to imagine. Now, you've probably seen the Jews now worshiping on the stones of what they say is a temple. Well, actually, that appears to be like a retaining wall and not part of the actual temple itself, but a retaining wall around the hill. upon which it's built. But Christ said, do you not see all these things? In other words, he's pointing to the temple and says, not one stone shall be left upon another. So if you're looking in Matthew 24, you can follow that along. Now, it is said, according to historians, that the last Jews of the city in 70 AD, they fled to the temple seeking some security, and the Roman soldiers, now one scenario says it was a drunken soldier, said, well, we'll flush them out, we'll burn them out, and so lit the place on fire. Now, there's a lot of wood support in the temple, and as it burned, and it burnt all of the ornate gold that was in the temple. It was, and so as a result, the gold melted. And where does it melt? Gravity pulled it down into the stones of the temple. And so later, now Josephus records that the stones were white and strong initially. And I find this hard to imagine. But he said the stones were 50 feet long, 24 feet wide, and 16 feet thick. And I'm going, well, let's see. This room here is about 80 feet from there to the back wall. So 50 feet would be roughly from the back wall to the center divider here. And I'm going, 24 feet wide. Well, this place is 36 feet wide. So that's an awfully big stone. So how to move it, I don't know. They had the technology then, as we know from the Egyptian hieroglyphs. We know they put them on rollers and things like that. So it's hard to imagine that they'd be disassembled. But when the Romans realized that the gold was down in between, melted all the stones, well, if they're going to get the gold out, they had to move the stones, and they were going to get every last bit. So what ultimately happened then, and as a result of the destruction in 70 AD, is that the temple indeed was thrown down, but nobody could have imagined how and why these things would be so. Then, but this is such drama that the Jesus' disciples, you know, they had a hard time. And so a couple of questions then they came up with. When the first question was, is of course, when's this going to happen? Logical question, right? When will these things be so? And the next question that comes up is, what will be the sign of your coming, of your return, and the end of the age? So those are two related questions. So first of all, when's it going to happen? And what are the signs? How are we going to know? It's not like you could run down to the stationery store, get a calendar, and mark it on your calendar. I don't know that they had them, the paper products like we do today, or look on their smartwatch, or have it set on their smartphone and put a little warning buzzer on there. Those things weren't happening. So they logically wanted to know. It's the same question people ask today. When will these things be so, and what are the signs of your coming in the end of the age? And so it's a logical question. Would any of us come up with any less of a question? So if we look in Matthew 24, the first three verses talk about the end time destruction of the temple. We can read about this same time period in Revelation chapters 1 through 5. Then the next verses are verses 4 through 14. What are the signs of your coming in the end of the age? And that'll relate to Revelation chapters 6 through 9. So we're looking at parallel accounts here that give us a more full understanding. So in this, in verses 4 through 14, Jesus describes what the world will be like. And what's his first thing that he mentioned? And that was, don't be deceived. Well, the first thing that came out of his mouth was, don't be deceived or don't be misled. In other words, people are going to try to deceive you. So therefore, you have to have your guard up. And then he tells us right down the line, if you want signs, you want to know when this is going to be, wars and rumors of wars, famine, pestilence, and earthquake. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't we read about those things in the Four Horses of Revelation 6, tribulation, where you will be hated and you will be killed for who you are and what you believe.
And then it's interesting, many offended and betray one another. Now, if we take a look at some commentaries, and I found said, this indicates that, now nowadays you can offend anybody for anything just by breathing, showing up, because people seem to be easily offended. But this also, as some commentaries say, this is a referral to both inside the church as well as outside the church, and betraying one another. Now we have the example of when the Soviet Union was dominant in its part of the world, and we think of East Germany, and when East Germany collapsed, what people found out is they had looked at all the records and said, my neighbor ratted me out. You know, I put in a fax machine and my neighbor ratted me out. Or, you know, and all of these problems that came because people were betraying one another, even people that were, they thought were their friends or their relatives and so forth. Interesting, Christ also warns in these verses that false prophets will deceive many. It doesn't say a false prophet will arise and some people will be drawn away. It says the word many. That means it'll be common. It'll be so that people won't necessarily know which one is a false prophet and which one is not if they are so easily deceived. Interestingly enough, it follows up with says, lawlessness will abound. Well, if you're going to have lawless behavior, that's sort of like people say, well, first you have sin and everybody's against it. And then, well, you should tolerate sin. And then after you've tolerated sin for a while, it becomes normalized. And when it's normalized, then everybody feels the bad effect of it. Following that, we see, Christ said, the love of many will wax cold. Well, I don't know how many of you burnt candles, probably most of you, if not all of you. And when the flame is hot, the wax melts and it runs down the candle. When the flame goes out, the candle cools off and it becomes firm and in its place. The wax gets cold and it's firm in its place. In other words, it's not the warmth that you would get from a warm candle. So this analogy is drawn. In other words, people will not have the same outgoing love and concern because that will be normal in society. Everybody's looking out for themselves. As Mr. Scott said, you know, they will have their own themselves or their own idol. I'm going to look out for me and everybody else. Too bad, so sad, it's too bad to be you. Interestingly enough, Jesus closes with this comment that the gospel will be preached to all nations and then the end of the age will come. It doesn't say all of these things will prevent the preaching of the gospel. It's going to happen anyway. So you can either be with it or you can be against it. And I'd say it was a safe bet to be with that in the preaching of the gospel. And notice, as a witness to all nations, does it say they'll all believe you? No. Now, I do a Facebook page and a YouTube channel in Eastern Europe. And there, this whole freedom of expression is new in the last generation since the Soviets went home in 1991. And now they're just getting to exercise and technology is coming along. And so, and we also have a public Facebook page for the congregation here in Northwest Arkansas. And the response rate is somewhere in Northwest Arkansas, 10 to 20%. It's huge because people have an underlying understanding that the Bible exists and many people believe it and who has a lot of positive response. You go to Eastern Europe and, well, some people will believe it, but it's remarkable to me, and I've commented, surprising to my wife, how many people feel free to make snarky public comments, to trash the Bible, to trash anything religious, because they weren't raised in that background and now they're adults. And so the number of people that mock anything having to do with God or church is really remarkable. So I have to keep track of that so that they don't pollute the websites. But the signs are all there. And if you would have read this without knowing world conditions, you'd say, well, that's pretty rough. And then you look around the world conditions today. How many people do we have that are the false prophets that are busy deceiving many and think that they're doing God a favor? How many of them cast off all restraint, don't bother following any of God's laws? and mock them, where that's not their problem, the love of many waxing cold. There's nothing to endure to the end because there is no end. They're just going to tough everything out and you're on your own. Tribulation, famine, pestilence, wars, and rumors of wars. Well, we've always had wars, so it's no big deal, right? Until you're in the middle of it. Ask those who were in Israel on October 7th this last year. I think we had, seven couples that we knew that were there, that we know personally, that brought stories, including my brother and his wife. So all of a sudden it becomes very real when you're in the middle. Famine, pestilence, and earthquake. Well, we all experienced some pestilence in the last few years. Famine, well, that's kind of what inflation will bring. Right now, we're fortunate that we haven't hit that turning point yet, but the price of groceries has changed a lot of people's approach to what they're eating and when they're eating it. I noticed a few more restaurants went out of business this last week in our area. Tribulation, ouch. Hated and killed. Why would somebody hate you and want to kill you? And yet, that is, Jesus said, it's going to happen. Okay? So we have these signs that are coming. So we have the end time destruction of Israel, of the temple, verses 1 through 3, verses 4 through 14 about the signs. And then it's interesting, in verses 15 through 28, we have comments about triggers. The abomination of desolations, great tribulation, and the false prophet. And that relates to Revelation 10, chapters 10 through 14. So if we're reading in parallel here, when we read verses 15 through 28, we can explore this. Now, when I say these things, you notice I'm saying this is an outline. Each one of these things are really a separate Bible study or sermon all in their own and can take off. But let's take a look at verses 15 through 28. First, we have the abomination of desolation. It's mentioned three times in the book of Daniel. And I put all three of those mentions there, and perhaps sometime we'll tackle that subject. It's a very vigorously studied subject because it's going to, it said, trigger what we call the Great Tribulation. So this abomination, something that's so bad and so horrible and repulsive to God that that it becomes a trigger. And then we look at the studying about the Great Tribulation. And it doesn't tell us everything in this one spot, but it does have, says that those are in Judea, which is a geographical area, that they should flee to the mountains. And then if those days should not be shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. So it's pretty dramatic that if history would be going on its own at that time without God interfering, everybody would die. All flesh would die. Well, there's only a few things that could cause that. Chemical, biological are really the things that come to mind, that God will have to bring this short because people will and the government and their governments are busy killing each other. He also mentions that this will be a time of major deception. Here we are back again with the white horse of deception and false Christ and false prophets. False Christ meaning some people will claim that they are the Christ, and other people will say, well, the real Jesus is the Christ. But then they will mislead everyone else with what they're saying and how they're saying it. Now, it's remarkable that these false prophets will show signs and wonders. You know, false prophets can show signs and wonders. And that's going to be very confusing to some people who aren't as firm in the faith as they need to be. So the words were, if possible, even the elect could be deceived. Meaning those who have answered the call of God and have brought that into their lives and becomes a major. It's not an idol. It's the way, it's acknowledging reality. So we have to ask, is it possible that we could be deceived by these false Christs and false prophets? And that's kind of scary because what if they're performing miracles and wonders That's convincing to a lot of people. Now, what did the apostles or the early disciples said is, what are the signs? And all of a sudden, signs start coming out. It's going to be convincing to some people. And then we have this description of Christ's return. And it comes as lightning. And you may have experienced it. Now, there's two kinds of lightning, bolt lightning and sheet lightning. And the bolt lightning, we think of it as a lightning bolt strikes a tree and takes a live green tree and turns it on fire. Okay, some of these remarkable things, or hits a building. And then there's sheet lightning, which spreads across the sky in a remarkable display. And I've seen that. Now, I don't know how many of you know that lightning is critical for productive soil. And that's why the Midwest and around the Great Lakes have the kind of weather that has a lot of lightning. And the more lightning you have, the richer the soil is, because it affixes the nitrogen from the air, drops it to the soil, and the bacteria turn it into nitrogen that the plants can use. So there are many lightning strikes per square mile in the Midwest and upper Midwest because of the weather patterns and a lot of rich black soil that have high nitrogen content that can grow lots of crops, and indeed do. It's a breadbasket of the world, as we might say, for that area. But when Christ's return is lightning and the sheet lightning goes across the sky, I have seen it in my own eyes after church in Minneapolis years ago, and as the evening was approaching and watching in the distance, there was no time when the sky was not lit up. It was lit for maybe a half an hour, constant lightning. We could watch it from 20, 30 miles away. Absolutely remarkable. You could not escape it. You will know it is happening because it was dark in the evening, but the sky was light. So Christ's return, everybody's going to know it at that time. So Matthew 24, verses 15 through 28 will be a time that explains what triggers it, the Great Tribulation, the false prophets, and then the initiation of Christ's return, the possibility of deception. So then we have verses 1 through 3, the end time destruction of the temple, the disciples asking in verses 4 through 14, what are the signs? Verses 15 through 28, about the abomination of desolation, the tribulation, the false prophet, the rise of false prophet. And then verses 29 through 31 is somewhat explicit about the return of Jesus Christ. And that refers to Revelation 15, chapters 15 through 20. And so we have some details about the return of Jesus Christ. It says the sun will be darkened. Now, later this year, there's going to be an eclipse, and it's going to hit a broad swath of Arkansas. And some of you might be encouraged to go down there and see what it's like to be dark in the middle of the day. But the sun will be darkened, and the moon won't shine, and stars will fall from heavens. So those are pretty dramatic things that we would recognize. I do not know what the details are when it says powers from the heavens will be shaken. Now, I can imagine, put forth some speculation. Does that mean comets go awry? Asteroids coming blasting in? I don't know. I'm just saying is that something is going to be happening there. Then it talks about the sign of the Son of Man will appear. Now, and I'm thinking that must be the lightning, because it doesn't tell us exactly what that is. But it follows it up with saying the tribes of the earth will mourn. What are they mourning for? In other words, the people around the world, what are they mourning about? Well, they're sorrowful because they don't know what's coming. We are fortunate to have a clue as to what's coming in the future. They don't. So there's going to be fear, and they're going to miss whatever they've had because it looks pretty scary for them. And then the tribes of the earth, it says, will see Christ coming on the clouds. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen anything coming in on the clouds. I've only seen storms coming in on the clouds. But clouds are up in the sky, which means everybody is going to see them. The lightning is going to be flashing. Christ will come on the clouds. And then it's interesting, it says the trump angels will come, and I put, should be with the sound of a trumpet. So the angels will come with the sound of a trumpet. So the trumpet will blast, the lightning will flash, Christ comes on the clouds, and the sound of the trumpet. And what do the angels do? It specifically says they will gather the elect from all parts of the earth. So this is the time right there in that it's explained in verses 29 through 31. So it's very explicit as to what's happening. So if we look at verses 29 through 31 about the return of Christ, then we go to verses 32 through 51, and I'm categorized that as, well, what should we be doing? And now if we look to Revelation chapters 21 through 22, it's a parallel account of this. So verses 32 through 51, in the what should we be doing, Jesus recalls the parable of the fig tree. And if you look at the fruiting cycle of a fig tree, and we've done presentation on that before, the fig comes first and the leaves, and it's usually hidden by an early leaf, and then and the later figs come on. So there's, you have an indication if it's going to be what's going to happen. But only God the Father knows when it will be. Does it say Jesus doesn't know? The angels, it specifically says, doesn't know. Only God the Father knows when this is going to happen. So what do we find in the world? Everybody's predicting when it's going to happen. And what do we know? They will be wrong. Okay? So, but one thing we are told, Jesus said it'll be in the days of Noah. In other words, life will be as usual. Pay no attention to all of the problems and things of the world, marrying and giving in marriage and living life as usual until it started to rain. Then all of a sudden, things got real serious. So Jesus said, basically, we need to be personally ready for the return of Christ. In other words, it matters to each person. Less concern about the others, not that we're unconcerned about others, but we take care of ourselves so we have the capacity to help other people. And then we have this phrase, blessed is the servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. And he told us this little story ahead of time, that if the master has given his servant a job to do and he goes away, you want the master comes back, he wants the servant to know that the job was being done. It isn't, oh yeah, I forgot to do that. Well, I didn't quite get around to it. Well, I've been meaning to. I'm thinking of 100 different excuses. But really, are we doing what we should be doing to prepare ourselves, preaching the gospel, and loving our brother? And so this is really, notice this word blessed. And I found this out a few months ago, is the word blessed. If we look up that word, what's the greatest blessing? It's the blessing of eternal life in the kingdom of God. Blessings don't get any better than that. So it isn't like, well, you get a little pin that you can put on and a reward here, or we'll call your attention and give you a plaque or a gold watch. No, it's eternal life is the servant who his master, when he comes, will find in so doing. So if we look at these, Matthew 24, we can put it into these categories. The destruction of the temple, the signs of the end of the age, and the return of Christ. The things to watch for, the abomination of desolation, tribulation of false prophet. Then specifically what happens at the return of Christ. And then what we should be doing in our lives. So now we look back again, and we say, does that correspond with what we learned about in Revelation 6, about the four horses of Revelation 6, where they have the, there will be deceit, the white horse, the red horse war, the black horse famine, and the pale horse disease. So follow through then, and when you get a chance, on the parallelism in the book of Revelation to how these four horses of Revelation 6 work together to help us to understand Matthew 24. So after this, at the close of service, then we'll have a short break. Then we're going to come back with the discussion sessions where we will dissect this and see what we're doing in our lives.